as we welcome in Cody Rhodes to the studio here. Now, we've had Triple H, we've had Seth Rollins, we've had Damian Priest, we've had a bunch of other Sergeant Slaughter or whatever. Nobody has come in. Sasha Banks or Mercedes Moné. Yeah. Nobody has come in with their own makeup artist like Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, that was she didn't discriminate there. She walked right in and powdered me right in front of everybody. So, you know, that is what it is.
Walking team of people powdering him up before he gets out for a radio interview.
That's the team. Kristen with a knee. She's everywhere. Yeah. Kristen with a knee.
How are you feeling good? Yeah. How you feeling, man?
I feel great.
Big stuff out of you here.
This is SummerSlam's first two night.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much responsibility in the fact that it's two nights in terms of MetLife. This is a huge, iconic stadium. A lot of energy. Plus, we're at WWE's backyard. And it needs to be, the first one needs to be the absolute best one to set the standard if we can keep doing this two nights each year and then not just WrestleMania be a two-night affair. So having Jelly Roll, having Cardi B, John Cena's farewell tour, all these elements of it are really important. I think everyone coming Saturday and Sunday is in for a lot of surprises and the good stuff.
And of course, you mentioned it, the first ever two-night SummerSlam takes place this Saturday, Sunday, MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. The event streams live in the U.S. exclusively on Peacock beginning at 6, and then it's available internationally on Netflix. Do you like the two nights from a performer's perspective?
Oh, I love it. I love the two nights because no matter how much you love wrestling, and I learned this when I was doing the independent stuff, one of them, House of Glory in New York, doing independent wrestling, they do a lot of dream matches where it's like 12 matches, and all these matches need some dedicated time. But the issue is the same as if you go see a movie. You might love the movie you're seeing. It might be Denzel, and Denzel could be your favorite actor, but we can't sit there for 5 hours without losing a little steam. Can't sit there for 7 hours. A marathon show, it ends up hurting the crowd a little bit, and then it sets up those who go last for not the best scenario.
Not a good environment.
You know, beach ball going around, the wave starts off. So I like the idea of two nights because it spreads the real estate. It keeps our crowd. The crowd's going to get more bang for their buck each night, and it also helps our locker room because the real thing about what we do is the struggle to get on these events, is the struggle to headline these events. That's the most real thing in our industry is the fight for it.
Yeah, for sure.
And now there's more real estate, so that's good.
Well, we were talking to you before you came on the air, you know, Dusty and the VHS tapes and all the different territories. I mean, within like 3 minutes, we hit like five or six different things. We were just jumping around. We're all big-time old-school fans. But we watched some of the new stuff for sure. But, you know, when we were coming up, it was wild. If there was an old-school match, like a type of match, not a steel cage, that's obviously common, but like almost like a dangerous match that they would never do now, and you would like to be a part of it, anything jump out? Remember with Valentine and Piper with the chains?
Dog
they
collar.
Were attached to the chain, the dog collar?
Dog collar.
Anything crazy you'd want to do?
Yeah, probably for me, I'd be interested in a first blood match. The psychology and how you do it and wrestle and the way you is really fun, and I loved first blood matches. They left a lot of, I'm thinking more from the behind the scenes perspective, but they left a lot of ways you could do it and keep guys whole, basically. First blood matches, one dog collar I don't see ever happening because of the neck and the whole, oh gosh, but you know what, too? Here's one that I've kind of thought about. I don't know what you'd name it because we have street fights like John Cena and I, SummerSlam. It's a street fight and it will be full tilt boogie, everything we can think of.
Oh,
right?
You mean, like if I'm in the crowd, you might come over and like elbow me or something.
It's quite possible. Quite possible. Ooh. So we go, we'll see how hard it all goes, but a knockdown, drag out, brawl. I don't know what it would take for us to put, and this is just a future match maybe, what we would call it. I used to love when they do the ropes in barbed wire.
Really?
I thought it was because Dusty and Tully would do.
Yikes, Tully Blanchard.
Oh my gosh, there was something about just the danger. You know, WWE has done the Inferno match where you get near the fire.
Yes, yes.
The danger of getting close. It's just like a kind of performer competitor's dream. I don't know. That's one I've thought about a lot in terms of that barbed wire and putting them on the ropes. But
And it was always real barbed wire, right? Wasn't gimmick, though.
It's
that
real.
Wasn't...
It's real. You a lot of these items, you've got to be really careful because if you gimmick them by today's standards, it's easy for somebody to find out you gimmicked them. And the first time Terry Funk falls back into barbed wire and gets all tangled up, you realize, uh-oh. Yeah, I just saw, I did a tour at the WWE warehouse, and I saw Triple H's 2x4 with the barbed wire wrap that he set on fire to hit Mankind in Hell in the Cell. Oh my gosh, the amount of things that were in this match that I just realized.
I've seen that show. That's a great show.
Oh, it's an iconic show.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
And the fans who were with me on the tour, the first thing they wanted to do is a little touch on it. And they found out, like, yeah, it's real barbed wire.
Wow,
yeah.
Man. So. You keep mentioning, we're in studio, BT and Sal on the Fan with Cody Rhodes. We'll keep you up to date on any trades that happen here ahead of the Major League Baseball trade deadline coming up at 6. You keep saying Dusty. Obviously, that's your father. So
yes.
It's weird to refer to him as Dusty, or weird for me to hear you refer to him as Dusty.
Yeah.
How much of what you do is for your father?
Oh, I think so much of my early career was really geared towards just classic son trying to make his dad happy, son trying to make his dad proud. And a lot of times subconsciously, there's people who are really heavy-handed with, I just want him to be proud. I just want that hug. I had all that. He was loving. He was top father, just Hall of Fame level father. But you still are chasing something. I think in my case, I was chasing his legacy because, and this is not a knock on anybody, second, third generations, there aren't as many who had a father who did as much. There are, they're out there, but he really climbed the mountain, then climbed another mountain, created all these concepts from behind the scenes to on screen. And that's just a really difficult legacy to catch up. And you hear guys all the time, oh, you know, he's not going to be able to fill those shoes or the shadow and whatever it was. I think that's part of life is I'm not afraid to chase it. I want to see if the WrestleMania, WWE title, that's the thing didn't get.
Well, I was just saying,
he
didn't. Do you think he now
got him?
You think
got
he him. Now surpassed him? I know he was great before WWE and all that stuff, but do you think you have Cody Rhodes surpass your father?
I would say no every time, 10 times out of 10. However, when somebody like a Mr. Heyman or a Bruce Pritchard or WWE Unreal on Netflix, in the first episode you introduce yourself and you don't say, I'm such and such a son, it's around that time when those things happen that you realize maybe you got a little done. Maybe you carved out something for yourself, but we're always tied together. You know, myself, my brother, Dustin as well.
Who's the best wrestler of the three?
Of the three, the best wrestler is Chicken, my brother. Best wrestler. And I say wrestler in terms of his in-ring is as sharp, even at 50-something, as anybody's. Best overall? I'm going to say me.
Yeah.
You have to at this point. Yeah, honestly, you have to, Cody. Come on, man.
Best overall, I'm going to say me. But everyone is very different. Very different.
Well, Cena's very different.
Yeah.
And you're locking horns with Cena. He just mentioned it's going to be a wild fight. So, you know, the styles make the fight. And obviously, the energy that's going to emit into the crowd. And it's going to be absolutely off the charts insane. But I don't want to say how do you match up with John, but in terms of the dance that you guys are getting ready to do, is it something that you feel amazing about or you feel good about?
So John is, and I feel like there's so many different parallels in all different professions with this, but John was my legitimate one of three mentors in wrestling. So back in the rental car days, I drove John around for 2 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Every show, he's on last. Every show, he's sitting there. He gets his merch report. Every show, everywhere he goes, there's pandemonium because he was the face of WWE at the time. That is wonderful, and I love that. But you take those lessons, you apply them, and you hopefully make yourself. And I feel like as John has come up here now, one of the real things you're going to see at SummerSlam is I am not here as a fan. I am not here as an apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be here and tell you, hey, it's good. I'm going to take WWE now. It's good.
Yeah.
And that is not popular amongst John Cena fans, and there's an army of them. But that's how it's supposed to be. I do no service to you, John, if I remain the kid driving you around, asking questions and not applying the answers. So very real in terms of this entire time that we've been linked together since he came back and since Toronto, where he turned bad guy, whatever it is, this entire time has been very authentically a challenge. Very in terms of, hey, you got to see me. No pun intended. You got to see me. Not the same guy.
Yep.
Not kid. And hopefully that translates in quite a brawl.
Well, yeah, it's going to. And you talk about like a torch pass, if you will. You know, how you talk about what you're doing and how you want him to perceive you. Is he okay with this? Because now he's at a different place than you. And for some people that are selfish or just a little bit reluctant to give up that spotlight, it's not easy.
I heard John so many times talk about I'm not going to ever hand this off. I'm not passing this. You're going to have to outrun me. I think maybe it's me. Maybe it's not me. Maybe he sees somebody else. But I do think he's looked at modern WWE. He's seen CM Punk. He's seen Rhea Ripley. He's seen Roman Reigns. He's seen myself, Jey Uso. I could name a bunch. He's seen us. And I think not okay with it, but I think he's aware it's a fight that he could lose. And a fight he could lose has never been a situation for John Cena. His entire run was he was head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yep.
And now he's joining the fray, and that isn't the case. But that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
I sound like such a dick.
No, no, honestly, dude. It's great. And by the way, you think he fully respects you? Fully.
I would hope so, but also not interested in finding out.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
I would hope so, because, God, I respect him.
Yeah.
God, I respect him.
Good answer.
But at a certain point, it's like, how long can you, you know, all right.
Is what it is.
It is what it is, you know? Yeah.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We're in studio right now with Cody Rhodes ahead of SummerSlam. First ever two-night SummerSlam taking place this Saturday and Sunday at MetLife Stadium. How much input do you have? Obviously, you've grown your career, and I want to get into that in a second, but you went to AEW. You were like the man there, all to say. Come back to WWE. Still the man, but as you mentioned, there's a lot of moving parts here. The Rock and Triple H and Cena. How much say do you have in your own storylines?
They're really great. When I say there, I'd say Triple H, I'd say Nick Khan, and The Rock are very good about, they're aware I've got a gut instinct, they're aware I've got an education on it, and they're aware I've got my own opinions on maybe what I could do, what I should do. However, coming in here, one of the greatest gifts to come back to WWE was, you guys tell me, I've been too caught up doing this all on my own. Tell me the play. That's why we say the quarterback thing. I am the quarterback of WWE, but you're telling me the play. You tell me the play, and I have to trust you. And Unreal, this Netflix show that's showing it all, you're seeing Michael Hayes. You're seeing Mr. Heyman. These are far greater minds than I have.
Hayes a little nutty, right?
He's all great geniuses, like Rick Rubin and all these. But you guys know more than I know. I have my gut, sure, but you know more than I know. I'm not afraid to ask you for, tell me where we're running on this.
But here's the thing, I'm sorry, Sal. The thing is, like, certain quarterbacks have the ability to audible, and certain quarterbacks do not. You have earned the ability to audible when you have to audible a little bit.
I think I've earned the ability, but I rarely do it.
Okay.
Because I want to know. I want to know if you were right. And then, man, if you were right, where did you learn that? Michael, is that something you did with Kerry Von Erich in 1980-something? Or Mr. Heyman, is this some piece from the Dangerous Alliance that you stole? Triple H, is this something you did in your own run? I want to know. And, I mean, gosh, like 9 times, pretty much 10 times out of 10, that crew is typically right. Because they did it at a high level. Like, connection is the thing. Today, it's all about these crazy athletic maneuvers and high spots and all this. That stuff's awesome. But if you are not connected with the fans, if there is not someone there who's like, I came to see Jey Uso, I came to see Rhea Ripley, what if you're not, then they're not watching.
Yeah.
And
gotta tell a story.
That's the storytelling component of it. And that's where, again, I say those guys know far more than we do. So I just like to listen.
And that's why I love watching the show on Real. I told you about
I'm jumping into it.
Yeah,
I'm sold.
Just come
I love this stuff.
I found out about it 2 nights ago. I watched the first
episode. It came out 2 nights ago, yeah.
Did it come out 2 nights ago? Okay, so then obviously I found out on time. We had Triple H yesterday, so I was like, let me do some prep.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode. Then I knew you were coming in today, so I binged last night. It is great. And, you know, I was going to ask you, and it's not just a plug. It's true. It's great. You'll love it because it goes into all that, how Triple H and Bruce Pritchard and Freebird, Michael Hayes, whatever, they go into coming up with the story and all this stuff. I was going to ask you about Travis Scott, and I'm smacking you pretty good there. And then I learned that you were good with him. Like, there was no issue whatsoever. He got you pretty good in that fight with Cena when he turned heel.
This probably will sound, I'll regret saying this, but I'm fine saying it. I am a really weird in the sense that I like to get beat up. I like you, man, hit me as hard as you can.
He got you good.
I don't know what it is, if it's an alpha toxic wrestler thing, hands down, hit right in the head, whatever it may be. I don't know. I there's an element of violence to this that I love. And it's kind of like living when you're out there. You're in it. So that didn't bother me one bit. I actually felt bad because I wanted to say, no, it wasn't him. No. But the issue was there's this unbelievably great fan cam and 80 other cameras of it happening. So I'm like, well, I don't think I can really peel that back. But no, I wasn't. Whenever we have a guest in our house, they have to really disrespect the crew for them to turn. We really, as a company, we love a guest.
Yeah.
And we're trying always. you have to grow your audience. WWE has broken every record under the sun as of late. I'd hate to come back here a year from now and be like, well,
yeah.
Dude, there was a kid, you know? Speaking of which, that kid, what the hell is the YouTube kid that had to run out there and was in the Rumble?
Logan Paul.
No.
Speed?
Yes. Dude, you got to see this guy's Speed. Did he really get his ass
so
hit?
I want to say, I hope Speed comes back. But that's a good old welcome to the business moment.
And you got to see this.
You got a young bull in Bron Breakker who's not gonna. You can't pull it, but also put some sauce on it. That guy
was it a punch or a slash?
No, spear.
Spear. I did see that.
And then that he got flipped ridiculous. Onto the table. Yeah. They showed the cut on his leg. I was like, oh my god! Like even in a show Unreal, which is taking you behind the scenes to show you all the inside. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, is this guy really like is?
If Speed was to come back, I'd probably try to like butter that bread a little bit and give him something a little easier to do this round. You know, like, hey, buddy, just jump off the top.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? He's good. The guy, his head got whipped.
I didn't see that. Well, listen, chair shots are always a risky proposition and some other stuff, but you can suplex somebody gently. You could.
Yeah.
I don't know how you negotiate softly a spear with that velocity. You cannot.
They did not. And I would understand. I like Speed. I would understand if he was coming on the show himself and be like, yeah, never again. I'll never go again. Yeah. Just, you know, because there's also something to that. It's what we do in the ring is difficult. Not everyone, sometimes you got to feel it. He maybe felt it too much.
Yep.
You know, but God bless him. He got up and left, though. He was live streaming in the hall, so he got up and left.
They didn't do it for free, man.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to something you said before. Talking to Cody Rhodes, BT and Sal. It's going to be a great weekend here. Of course, Saturday, Sunday, MetLife. You get SummerSlam, two nights, first time they've done this. So you talk about how you know, in a weird way, you like to get hurt, like pain. You like to feel it.
Yeah.
Now, not everybody has your charisma. Most don't. Not everybody has your mic skills. Like, there are certain things that obviously separate the good from the great and the great from the old time. I get that. You're welcome. But I would think that inherently, almost every wrestler has to have some liking of getting hit. Otherwise, you're not a wrestler.
I don't know.
No?
These Gen Zs, their little hood up, hat on, hitting their vape pen. I don't know if... I don't know if they know, and the only way they'll figure it out is if you really want the spot, you got to go through it. I remember Randy Orton when he was coming up, pretty boy Randy Orton.
Oh, yeah.
Then he's in there with Cactus Jack, and thousands of tacks are laid on the mat, and then all of a sudden he's falling into the tacks, and he's bleeding, and it's a mess. You got to go through it. There is an element to this that's collaboration and synergy and rhythm. But it's HD. It's in there. There's mics everywhere. There's cameras. So you gotta have a good chin. So maybe it's not an indictment on Gen Z.
Uh-huh.
I just don't. If you don't have a good chin, I can already tell. I am concerned because somebody.
Can you tell right away?
I don't like to judge right out the gate, but I do have a good barometer on. Gonna make it.
Yep.
Gonna make it. And I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good. Ratio of times I was correct on gonna make it. But yeah, you gotta have a good chin because this is difficult. We used to joke all the time. You'd have a black eye, you'd have a cut, something would go wrong, you'd tear a muscle. The joke used to be, well, at Ant Ballet. And that joke has moved on because if you really look into it, ballet is extremely difficult. And like these feet are breaking and stuff. So I don't know what the parallel is these days, but yeah, you gotta have a good chin, that's for sure.
You ever see Black Swan? That was a great movie.
That was a good movie.
And it made me think, like, wow, this is much more difficult than I thought.
Yeah.
BT and Sal in studio with Cody Rhodes. So your own career, to me, it's fascinating. Son of a legend, right? Your brother in the business, all that stuff. Goldust, we mentioned that stuff before. But you started out, you certainly were not a main eventer to a point where you had to leave. You wanted to go to AEW. They made you the guy there. You became the guy there. Dude, I mean, did you ever think that this would be possible, that you would be the main event or WrestleMania, SummerSlam, whatever, that you would be the guy in the company knowing the way that it started for you when you first came up in WWE?
I consider everything that happens now, including this literal moment I'm sitting in here with you fine gentlemen, I consider everything undiscovered country. I did not. I wanted it. And at a time had confidence. I was never not confident. But I was a very slow learner and I was treated like a child because I came into the company as a child. And coming back was an opportunity to redo it all, show them exactly who I stand as now, exactly what I have. So everything is a gift. It really is. Main eventing a WrestleMania is basically like a political campaign. I mean, to get to the final two people on Sunday night, the last thing they're going to see in a show that is going to gross absurd amounts of money, bring in billions of dollars in television rights. If you actually weigh it all out and have a perspective on it, it's a little bit terrifying.
It would paralyze you probably with fear. You couldn't do your job as well.
And that's to get one.
Yeah.
Is to get one. To now having had four is, that's what I said, undiscovered country. I have plenty of things I still want. But a lot of people around me are asking, well, hey, what's next? You made it in WrestleMania. You won the title that Dream didn't. What's next? And that's the scary thought, but that's the fun in the game. What is next?
Yeah. What is it? Is there something? I mean, where do you...
What is next is I got to win the title back in the main event at SummerSlam in a street fight. That's the immediate next.
You called them Dream, you called them Dusty. I just have this vision, especially of when you were born-ish, right around that vicinity, even a little bit younger for sure, but... You know, I know the guys hit the road a lot at that point. They were Dusty wasn't home a lot, but when he was home, I don't know, was Andre the Giant coming over for a barbecue? Are you hanging out with Jimmy Snuka? I mean, what is the crew in the backyard like?
Really great picture of us camping where Andre came.
No way.
So there's a picture of my dad in the urinal next to him, and my dad has his hand on Andre's ass. And my sister has more of these memories are vivid of him just like picking her up with one arm.
Yeah, yeah.
And she fell off the back of a boat one time and Road Warrior Hulk snatched her up. Like softball games with Sting and Lex Luger, the Four Horsemen coming over for a Thanksgiving.
Art Anderson, that group.
Double A. A very
eclectic group.
But it was so normal to me. It wasn't until I saw everything else, like what my other friends' dads did and stuff, I thought, it is a little.
Yeah.
We do have a strange life. But so when I was born, for example, my dad was at the Forum in Los Angeles, and my mom went into labor, so he flew back on a private jet, which is one of the reasons that Crockett Promotions would eventually go bankrupt, the amount of use of these private jets. So he flew back with a group of wrestlers, Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez, Arn Anderson, Magnum T.A., and they got him obliterated on this flight. So my Aunt Bobby, who's my child's godmother, my Aunt Bobby claims she did everything. And then he just showed up for the photo.
Are you serious?
And the photo is of him. He looks completely glassed over. There's a fresh cut on his head. He's wearing the scrubs. And he's holding me, and he's just looking. He looks like he's not there, but he's there.
Yeah.
And then apparently at Presbyterian Hospital in Charlotte, North Carolina, the wrestlers, they came immediately from the plane. So the waiting room, pizza stack sky high, stuff overturned, Arn Anderson sleeping on the floor. It's this whole scene.
Dude, that's...
Just to get that there for my birth. And then in his booking journal, it says Forum. It says how much money they made. It says the matches. And then at the bottom, it just says Cody Bourne. Like just this little
that is incredible.
I've denoted as a booking note, Cody Bourne.
They must had a sellout that night.
Yeah, they did well, so it was a good night.
But I don't. Some of the stuff that I love from that generation is that the guys hung out. I mean, I've read stories, we've seen documentaries. So and so driving 500 miles, drinking 35 beers. Not that you should do that, but that's what they did back then. Snorting coke, whatever they were doing. You guys don't really party together, right? You don't really. It's all like an individual entities, right? Kind of.
There's been this big shift in the partying, and Undertaker saw the shift firsthand because Undertaker was a big beer, Jack Daniels guy, hang out amongst the crew, so much get in trouble, but always we're drinking together, we're having a good time. He was at the tail end of his run with WWE right around the time that we and Guitar Hero and things that became, what was happening. Now it's a Call of Duty setup in the locker room. So I feel he was very frustrated seeing that this is what's happening. However, because he's not wrong. I recently the charter flight we had back from Saudi Arabia, I tried to get Undertaker style and get that plane going a little bit.
Nice.
So it's still there.
Okay.
But there is a piece to that. I don't mind the video game culture one bit.
Yeah.
Because they're asking us today, you're doing media, you're doing press, you're up early, you're doing wrestling matches that require you to come off your feet quite a lot. You're taking big bumps. You're rotating. Your neck is at risk. All these things. I don't mind a healthier crew. Yep. I don't mind a amino acid shake and a Call of Duty game. A healthier crew is a happier crew.
BT and Sal on the Fan In Studio with Cody Rhodes. A couple more minutes here. SummerSlam, first ever two-night SummerSlam taking place this Saturday, Sunday at MetLife Stadium. One thing I learned from watching Unreal on Netflix, you can check it out. It's out there now. A lot of anxiety. Almost so much so it gives me anxiety for the performance anxiety with different superstars. Yeah. Do you have performance anxiety before a big match?
Oh, gosh, the way you worded that. Performance anxiety.
It's tough, man.
I mean, well, you know what he meant. So he didn't mean the other thing.
I pop though, just how it's because I'm I am.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. I've been married for like 8 years. That's
no, yeah, that's the point. I am very nervous. Typically, I think most of my anxiety is in the week leading up, and the big things are. And WWE, Nick Khan, Chris LeGentle, these guys, Matt Altman, this talent relations core. The reason I shout them out is because what will help quell this anxiety is let me get the things I need to get in. Let me get to the gym. Let me get proper nutrition. Let me, again, all the PEDs and stuff, that's all gone now. So you have to, if you're going to be presented as an athlete, you have to live an athlete's life. You have to do this. Let me do PT. Let me do recovery. It sounds super boring, you know, cold plunge, all these things. However, if I can get them done, I mean, it's a list every pay-per-view. It's a handwritten list. If I can get them done when I get there, I'm in the best mood of my life. Almost too loose. I'm in the best mood because I did it all.
Yep.
Now I'm going to just hit the freaking music. Let's go.
But now that's being prepared physically. Yeah. What about from a creative perspective when you're on the mic and you try to sell something and it's not coming to you the way it does another night? That's got, to me, that's
terrifying.
Now you put it in his head. I don't even like thinking about that.
What do you do? How do you push? Do you have to fight through it? What do you do?
Well, I think the biggest thing you could do is you can power through it, but best to use your ears. Best to use your ears. For example, I'm not wishing this upon myself, but this is MetLife. This is New York, New Jersey. This is probably an away game for me. It's John Cena's last Mania. I mean, last SummerSlam was his last Mania. Yeah. This is probably some booze.
No, I'm rooting for Cena. I'm sorry.
Hey, it's okay. Right, Jets and Giants get booed. You fit right in.
So with that awareness, you can't play it like, oh, they're all cheering for me.
Yeah.
Because people think that we Sweden sound at WWE. We don't. It's that hot when it's that hot, and it's that, oh, man, they are giving it to this person. I think with that, I just want to use my ears because as I still like to, I'm a babyface in the wrestling game. I like that. That's who I am. With that in mind, I can't pretend you're not feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Go ahead. You know, I've been telling people, you want to do this, let's go Cena sucks. Just put it on me. Let's go Cody sucks. Put it on me. Let's give him everything. He deserves it, right?
There you go.
He deserves it. But with that in mind, the biggest mistake, sometimes you said powering through. I don't like powering through because powering through feels like I'm just doing this for TV. This is just for the TV. But nah, I was in that arena.
Yeah.
You can hear, you know, I want them in on it. I want them in. And sometimes you get lucky. I've had the ability a few times to, okay, a little rough. Let's see if I can turn them. And then you're able to do it. That's the education. That's the, hey, I knew what to say in this moment. Because the fan is, I mean, no pun intended, the fan is our show. It is. We play lead singer or lead guitar, and they are every other instrument.
Oh.
So if you ignore them, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Family good, Cody? I mean, I've been watching the reality. You guys had a reality show years ago. I know you get your young daughter, Liberty, 4 years old. Disney trips, what do you guys got with the Rhodes family?
Liberty is a Disney child, big time. Liberty also the other day told my lovely wife, Brandy, that she would prefer a private flight and not Delta. So that's got to get fixed. We've got to straighten that out in terms of her expectations.
You shut down the park when you go to Disney?
lately, it's so we were like Disney people. Right?
Oh, I love Disney.
We're big into Disney culture. We're in every element of it. We see annual pass, all this. But now it's gotten to be a little bit of a, ooh, this is tough. And that...
You mean tough from an expense? How do you think we feel paying
for
it?
From a recognition.
From just general... Oh, okay. The wrestling fan is everywhere now. Yeah. And I like to say yes. So what happens a lot is my wife's plan of action, you'll see it if you ever come up to me in the park, she just keeps walking. So she's good. Her and Liberty are going to be on teacups by the time I'm fighting all the way back pre-going under the bridge at the castle. Like I'm... But that's how we do it. Because my wife knows how much I love the fans.
Yeah.
And she knows to let other people around me know he's going to say yes.
That's awesome.
He's that way. So I just got to find her.
Yeah. Yeah. We just got, like you saw, we got a whole team of people who can get me back to where I need to go.
Get you in trouble and more importantly, get you out.
Yeah.
You've been with Cardona before and his family at Disney?
So we used to go quite often. He was one of the first guy I ever did like a VIP tour with. With Matt, I watched him get cut off. I've never seen anyone get cut off at Disney, at Carthay Circle. He got cut off. That was in L.A. He just messaged me about the new test track, the revision
one
to
the
test track.
There, yeah.
So I got to figure out what he's a really good park judge.
Well, I was going to say, does he maybe get jealous if you're at the park together and you get mobbed and people don't recognize
him? No, because when we're together, it's pretty... They're pretty great about it. No, he's also someone who loves it.
Yeah, I know.
He's about it. One time he came in his gimmick shirt, so his merch shirt with his merch shades, and had the hair sticking straight up. So there wasn't an element of. I think he even oiled up his arms. It wasn't an element of like, hey, you're not hiding at all here.
Because
in these pictures, I just look like a homeless person standing over to the side. But yeah, no, he's a good park buddy.
Got to get your opinion on this. I'm going to wrap it up here. Cody Rhodes with us here in studio, BT and Sal on the Fan. So 2 years ago, Sal and I do an NFL
for football
betting
season,
and I lost the bet, and I had to get dressed up as Goldust. I need your honest reaction. As Hoff shows you the picture right now. How'd I do? I did the makeup myself. I don't have people fawning over me.
In traditional Goldust Stardust style, I did the makeup for me. Dustin always did his own makeup.
Yeah.
So you went doink.
He had a pick. I didn't choose doink, but yeah.
I think you did a great job.
Not bad, right?
Yeah. Glennie Balls, because I did Sunday Conversation. I watched him have to go through it. It's harder than people think.
Yeah.
If you don't get the makeup off right away, it stays. You got... Essentially eyeliner for the day.
Yeah.
You did a very good job.
And there was a couple of versions of your brother that I wasn't doing.
So he got really artistic. Yeah, no.
I picked the same. For me, I'm like, all right, I can do this.
But so when I used to do Stardust paint, I'd do like little lines, and I'd watch him, and he'd be over there painting a masterpiece on his face.
He got
and
good
like,
at it.
He got good at it. Yeah, Dustin's really talented. He's like a great older brother in terms of can do it all.
The street fight with Piper when they basically ran each other over was some of the craziest. That punch, didn't somebody broke his hand?
So they all go to the hospital after.
Yes,
they film it a week before.
Yes,
and then they all go to the hospital, and then they just they put the same clothes on.
Yes, they pick it back
for
up.
The arrival. Yeah.
You saw that, right, Tom? Sal, right?
Oh, yeah,
they use OJ Bronco footage.
That was wild. All right, Cody, we appreciate the time, man. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Good luck at SummerSlam against Cena. The first ever two-night SummerSlam taking place this Saturday, Sunday, MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. Even off the air, we were giving a lot of stuff. Like, you could talk to a guy like that for hours. And I know
there's no question.
The trade deadline, so it was a little tricky day. We want to make sure we navigate it properly. But and he only has, he spent a lot of time here, actually, a half hour or so.
They did.
So we did get a lot there, but there's a lot more, man. His career, his father's career, all the stuff. He was very open and honest. Good for him, and he was great.
Well, the good thing about somebody like that, and there are other people, it's not just Cody Rhodes, but there are some people who walk into a room when you do what he does, the centerpiece of said organization, and you flip up the wattage, and then as soon as the cameras go off, you kind of dial it back down. And not that you're being fake, but there's an elevated presentation of who you are. And I'm not saying that there's none of that with Cody, but as soon as we went to commercial, it's like we were having the same exact conversation. Same energy, same interest, same authenticity. That was cool. That was a lot of fun.
And, it's going to be fun watching him out there do his thing on MetLife. And we all can appreciate his story, which is why fans got behind him. And it was a whole thing, ahead of WrestleMania, whatever year ago or so, whatever it was, before he lost the belt to Cena. Finish the story, have Cody win and finally be a champion of WWE, because he came from... I know his father was famous, but worked his way up where he was just an undercard type guy.
Yeah.
Or whatever the term they use, jobber. I hate even to use that, but I'm just trying to.
He was never a jobber, was he?
I don't know. I don't know about that, but I know he might have been at some points. Like he was working his way
like
up.
Like SD Jones?
No, not that type jobber. Yeah. I don't think he was losing to Bundy in 5 seconds or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But to a point where he wanted to leave to go. Like, you know what? I could relate to that aspect of it. When you come up in a business.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can, or whatever it may be in life, when you come up as in some spot, you're viewed as that. So for me, when I came here as an intern and a tape op and a board op, working my way up, I was just, a behind the scenes guy who wanted to be on the air. And even if you do a show, it's like, little Sal behind the scenes. It takes a lot to shed that eventually. Oh, okay, you're part of Mike's team. Like, it takes a while to be on your own. And I did have to leave and go, you know, for multiple different reasons, whatever it may be. So I could just relate to that, where he was Cody's, it was Dusty's son.
Yeah.
Okay, get an opportunity, but you're a kid, as he was saying, like you looked at as a kid. And then he finally went to AEW. That's where he became the man at AEW. Maybe some other lesser companies, whatever, but I remember it being at AEW. It's like, okay, here's Cody Rhodes, going to be the man. And then he came back as a more prominent figure and should be taken more seriously.
Well, I think that there's, see, it's interesting because I was just having this conversation with my son over the Little League ejection. That's not apples to apples, but I'm going to kind of create a little thread that I think you'll appreciate. Like, pertaining to Cody, so yeah, his dad's Dusty, and he comes from a crazy family tree. And Dusty, really, now Dusty didn't look the part; he didn't have a good body, but Dusty was a phenomenal in-ring tactician and great on the mic. His dad was a top five megastar for a long. He was right there with Hulk and Andre and Bruno. Like, Dusty Rhodes was incredible. So that opens up doors because you're Dusty's son,
right?
But the level of scrutiny is, it can also offset that. And what I was telling my son, I said, listen, I said, again, I'm not proud of this, but there's a lot of, you know, dads that get thrown out of a baseball game. The only one that's in the newspaper was me.
Right.
So I'm like, yeah, okay, so you could come and watch a St. John's practice because dad has access to Rick Pitino and St. John's. But the flip side, which is a great thing, but the flip side is if you do something wrong or if daddy messes up, and I messed up a little bit that day and I got to own it, well, guess what? You know, there's a little bit of a penalty to pay. So there's a lot of good and a lot of, and I'm not trying to make myself Dusty Rhodes. I'm not at all. But,
no, but if Cody's not,
it's very, a lot of stuff you got
to
deal with.
Yeah. So, and he had to deal with that now, obviously, at the top of his game. All right. Let's get back to the baseball stuff here at BT. 888-808-1019.
Cashman, wake up, Cashman.
Yeah, I mean, nothing doing here for both the Mets or Yankees throughout the course of that last half hour. We weren't ignoring anything. Much ado about nothing as far as the last hour goes. Matter of fact, the only thing that I saw of note, Mike Puma of the Post reporting that the Mets at the moment, this was at 12:05, Mets at the moment view a starting pitching addition as less likely than a bat, but not impossible. So, I mean, there's still a chance here that the Mets get both a bat and a starting pitcher. Like, I would think that yesterday, because it feels like, wow, man, the Mets went big yesterday, got a couple of relievers, and maybe just like a little fine-tuning now. No, I still think yesterday is separate, and now today you still could go big by adding another starter, whoever that may be, and another bat, potentially too. Like, in my mind, if Lau's available and you get Mullins or a lesser center fielder, but maybe it's Robert, who knows, still a long way to go as far as the deadline goes for both the Mets and the Yankees.
I'm going after the bat. I've said that for a month or so for the New York Mets here. Now, I want your opinion, though. Clay Holmes, the last eight starts, ERA is almost five. You know, he just doesn't have great command of his pitches, really battled yesterday, 3 2/3, like 80 pitches, whatever it was. He doesn't look, and he's tired, and he's logged a lot of innings. Now, if Clay Holmes was pitching a lot better recently, would you still feel like you needed to get a starter, or is a lot of that attributable to Clay Holmes kind of going the other way?
I don't feel like they need another starter. I know this thought process, and I've heard a lot of people say, John Harper, I think, was saying it last night on SNY, saying that get a starter, just a starter, and then you can move Holmes to the bullpen. I don't need to do that. Come postseason, I think there are different options. Whether it is pulling from the minor league level, if you think somebody's going to help you out, whether it is saying, okay, Clay, you're a starting pitcher, we value you as a starter, but hey, even the most qualified starters come postseason sometimes for loaded rosters, they get moved to the bullpen. We've seen that many times before, so he shouldn't be above. It's not a transition back to being a bullpen arm. It's just you've pitched out of the bullpen and you've done it well before, and there's not a spot for you in the starting rotation, so you could go back. Right now, he would be, I'd still trust him more to start a game than Montas. But if they got, let's say, a fourth starter that could potentially bump Montas and Holmes back, then maybe come postseason, I would use Holmes out of the bullpen. But I don't think the Mets need a starting pitcher.
I don't think they need one either. And I've said for a while, I really like the top three guys now that they're back here. And the other thing, too, is, well, listen, I get it. It's a problem. Holmes' lack of length obviously, you know, just makes it a much more complicated job for Mendoza with the bullpen and stuff. But with all these additions and all these now capable arms in the bullpen, not that you want to see Clay Holmes go four innings, but you're better equipped to deal with a 3 2/3 inning outing or a four inning outing or a 4 1/3, you know, anything less than five, because you've got a lot more capable, useful arms down in the bullpen.
I think the Mets staff, barring, and knock on wood, obviously, barring an injury to one of the top guys, and I don't know how you can, and even then, maybe the insurance would be, hey, they pull from the minors. Or like you said, today maybe you go add a top starter that's out there. That could be the insurance. Otherwise, I don't know what you're supposed to do. Like, they have Manaea, they have Senga, they have Peterson. One of those guys fall. All right, next man up, you get two. If Manaea and Senga, let's say, God forbid, get hurt.
Well, I mean, now we could just sit here and say that about everybody.
No,
I mean, that's.
But it is different with them because Senga is always banged up. He's been often banged up. And Minaya has the loose bodies in the elbow. That's the only reason why I would even say it.
I got you.
And,
I see what you're saying.
And it's not like those guys are bona fide number ones to begin with.
Uh-huh.
Like the Yankees lost Garrett Cole. They got Max Fried.
Yeah, yeah. Right no, there. I understood.
I mean, that's why I don't think the Mets need it, but I wouldn't be opposed to it. Dave is calling from the Jersey Shore. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Dave.
How you doing, guys? Love the show, dedicated listener. Real nice. Quick, BT.
Yep.
I worked for a guy named Bill Tierney at Solomon Brothers, a brokerage firm in the 70s. I don't know if he's related to you, but he's a great man.
Did he make a lot of money? Because if he's related to me, then no, then we're not related. No, same name, not related.
I wanted to ask you that many times, but anyway, I was thinking about that guy, what's his name, Denzel Clark from Oakland. He's like an unbelievable center fielder, and he just came up. He's like a rookie.
But why would they trade him? I know what you're saying because he makes some spectacular plays, terrific defensive center fielder. Why would they trade him?
I'm just saying that they need a really good center fielder with defense. I think he would be a perfect fit with our lineup, and maybe the kid will come
Dave, they have defense in center field. Tyrone Taylor's very good. They need offense in center. They need a stick.
They need an everyday big league center fielder.
They need another bat.
I was thinking about Trout, but I think he's getting too old.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch him. And thank you for the call, Dave. I shouldn't say I wouldn't touch him.
I was going to ask you. I mean, not even a kick of the tires. They ate a few bucks.
The money, nothing. We went over the contract.
I know we did. Like, I got to pop it back up. We did.
No, I'm good with a look. I want Brandon Lau. He wasn't even on my radar. But once it came out that the Mets were interested in him, I would love to see them get him because to me that would mean putting Lau at second base and moving on from the jumbled kind of mess that they have with the other guys, whether it's Acuna, Beatty, Vientos, all three, whatever, and then you could go add Cedric Mullins. I don't know if it's realistic or not, but that to me would be my priority. If it's not that, then I would want Robert because Robert's got the potential to be an impact bat, unlike Mullins, who's just, he's a fine center fielder and an upgrade, but it's not an impact bat. Robert might not be that bat, but he's got the potential to be so where I don't see another center fielder that does.
I don't either. Let me just give you a little bit on the Brandon Lau stuff. Everybody knows where he plays. Everybody knows what position, what team, and he's obviously a good hitter. But I think that there's a chance that Lau is a Met. So let me at least give you, three or four little quick items from Savant just that I think you'll find interesting. Now, this is not good. He is in the 1 percentile for range. All right. He's in the 15th percentile for arm strength. Second base, don't really care about that. Or base running run value, not good at all. Like, you're talking 3, 4, 5%. So the things that he's bad at, he's actually really bad at. But he's a hitter.
He's a hitter.
He's a stick, and you need a stick.
And by the way, he could be the DH. Like, we talk about
what about Winker? Have you abandoned hope for Winker?
No,
like, what's
no but I'd rather have Lau. Lau's a hitter. Look
no, Lau's better than Winker.
So my
point
is, I'm saying, like, I'm thinking about second base, but you could also have a spot where, depending on who they give up to get Lau, you have Lau DH, and you could still have McNeil or Acuna at second base, or even Beatty, whatever. Like, you're not going to give up everybody for Lau. And it's not going to cost you anything to get Cedric Mullins, meaning it's not going to be anybody of real value.
Mm-hmm.
He's a free agent that's having an okay year. So what's the value of him, like a double-A player or whatever prospect? You're not giving up anything of significance for Cedric Mullins. So it shouldn't be unrealistic to get Lau and Cedric Mullins, and you could have Lau DH and still have McNeil, let's say, at second base.
Yep, just to dot this on the other side here. He does strike out a lot, doesn't walk a lot. You know, right around 25% K rate, that's high. Right around 7% walk rate, that's very low.
He would be still, though, a significant upgrade.
I agree.
Like that, when you talk about a bat, right, the Mets aren't getting Robert for a bat. They're getting Robert, and that's the biggest name that they've been connected with as far as the offense goes. Right? I mean, Lau and Robert are the two guys.
Yeah.
Give me the other guys available. Yeah. Like, Suarez has obviously moved on.
No, I agree.
Like,
those are the two guys.
There haven't been a ton of bats. You're not getting Robert because of his bat. You're getting him because he can play center field and the potential of his bat. Lau would be the bat right now. You put him in the lineup, he's going to hit and be an upgrade of what you have for, at the very least, DH and potentially even at second base and or both. Like, he could play a little second, but he could DH as well.
Everybody healthy. Where do you think, if they get somebody like, or if they get Lau, where's he hitting? Give me the optimal spot. Is he six? Is he five? Like, where do you think Lau's hitting?
I mean, dude, right
now. You think
now,
he's hitting two?
No. Right now, I'd probably have him behind Pete.
hitting
you put five.
Yeah, well, give me the other options right now. If Nimmo, obviously outside of Kwan, and Kwan would be another bat that could lengthen things out, you put him leadoff spot and you move Nimmo down. Again, he hasn't been rumored really with the Mets.
Nope.
So I would put Lau. Okay, he's got 19 homers on a year.
Like, no, Lau can hit.
Yeah, good OPS. So I would have him behind Pete myself. And then you could have, again, it depends on who's here.
You
right?
can stretch things out
Is Vientos here? Is he not? Is Beatty, McNeil? Like, what's the, are you getting a center fielder in addition? But yeah, I would probably go Lau, Alvarez, center fielder,
Beatty-ish, third baseman.
Right, exactly right. Okay. Depending on whatever lineup is that night, DH or second base.